What's your emergency?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the PIO Podcast, a place for all things public information related for police, fire, EMS, and local governments.
It was a good learning experience for a lot of us that social media is not real life.
But we have to remember the media are very rarely a target audience. They're simply that conduit.
Our words have impacts on individuals, and it may not be positive. So just being thoughtful and mindful of the words that we speak.
I think what's so interesting about this position too, and this job and this profession, is that every one of us is looking for purpose. And when we find it here, that's it.
To know is that a crisis for one is not necessarily a crisis for another.
Hey guys, I wanted to jump on here for a minute. I hope you're enjoying our content. If you could take a moment to look in today's show notes at the bottom, you're going to see a link that says support the show. The PIO Podcast needs support to keep connecting with these amazing resources. Any amount helps. Thanks, everybody. We really appreciate it. Hello, March. 2024 is truly moving quickly. We continue to discover and hear from other PIOs across the country this month. In April, we have some exciting news. We will hold our very first live panel discussion. More details on that will be coming as we move into March. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode.
Good morning. Today in the PIO Podcast, we have retired Chief of Police and PIO Gary Woodruff. He's from the Lawrence Police Department in Indiana. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Gary, let's talk basic. How long were you with the Lawrence Police Department?
Yeah, so I started my career in 1983 in the U.S. Army Military Police in the Criminal Investigations Division. And served 3 years there. Then from 86 to 2000, I served with an agency called the Frankfort Police Department, which is still here in Indiana, a couple counties north of Indianapolis, with the Frankfort Police Department. I was a legacy hire there. My dad served on 20 years on that department and was a two-term chief, and then went on to be a two-term mayor there from 92 to 2000. So had the pleasure of being along with some of his career there, and then in 2000 transferred to Lawrence and was with the Lawrence Police Department since from 2000 to 2024, where I retired in January of 24 after 40 years of total law enforcement service.
Nice, very good. All right, so how long were you the PIO as well there?
Yeah, so I served as PIO. I was trained initially as a public information officer in 1992 and started serving as the Frankfort PD PIO in 93. And when I transferred to Lawrence, continued that service to really throughout my tenure there at Lawrence, other than the initial, ramp on initial training time there at Lawrence and orientation. But then continued with serving as a PIO, and it was our media relations chief really since 2014 probably, and served continuously as a PIO for 30 years since 30 plus years since 1993.
So let's talk about location and stuff. Where is Lawrence PD located in Indiana for our listeners? So we have a geographical location. What is the sworn manpower, and then the civilian professional staff? How many of each?
Yeah, absolutely. So Lawrence, Indiana, is situated within Marion County / Indianapolis, right in the heart of the state of Indiana. Indianapolis is obviously a major metropolitan area, and Indianapolis has a unique government system called Unigov, where the city and county services are all combined. And then within the county, there are several excluded municipalities from Unigov. In other words, we have our own political structure. Lawrence is the largest of those. Population, daytime population, just a little bit over 50,000, 53,000 probably. And then of course, with working population there, we're up in the 65,000-70,000 range probably. And it's a thriving community, very diverse. home of the former Fort Benjamin Harrison, our U.S. Army base, and still home to the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, which is the largest building second largest building in DOD behind the Pentagon, and then the third largest building in the entire country. So it's a huge, sprawling campus with several thousand people working there on a daily basis. And as far as our department is concerned, we have 115 people under the roof of the Lawrence Police Department. That includes 65 full-time sworn members. We have about 30 or so reserve officers. And for agencies that don't enjoy the privilege of having reserve officers on their department, these are people who basically volunteer for free to serve as police officers. They're fully trained. Many of them have attended the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy. And they're just such a value added that we can leverage as a department. And they bring a tremendous value to us. And then we have our own communication center as well, 15 telecommunicators there. It's of critical importance that we maintain our own communication center. We are the backup site for the Indianapolis/Marion County communication center. And then we have several civilian support personnel, front office staff, crime watch coordinator. We have a full-time staff chaplain, which is kind of unique for a department our size. And they focus on several duties that, we're really big on community outreach, but we're also well known as being a pretty aggressive police department. We finally call ourselves Law Town in Lawrence. So, we enjoy terrific community support. People who choose to live in Lawrence within Marion County, they're kind of independent. They like living out in Lawrence. They like having a police department that, we have the best of both worlds, we like to call it. We have the small town feel where everybody kind of knows everybody. But yet we have the urban activity that you would have in a major metropolitan area.
Okay, so your former agency has the distinction of being one of 50 agencies across the United States that was featured on the A&E documentary show Live PD. Let's talk about how that came to be.
Yeah, what a terrific experience that was. And the folks from Live PD connected with us, one of the great takeaways, I think, from that initial connection is the value of building and maintaining relationships. And we all know the importance of that, but this event certainly illustrates that. So the producers of Live PD were well established into their run as the most popular television show on cable, especially on Friday and Saturday nights. The only more popular TV shows that were on cable, period, were sporting events. Live PD was a massive success with the viewing public, 2 million viewers every Friday and Saturday night. And for people who aren't familiar, this is a TV show on A&E. It was a live documentary where camera crews, journalists, would ride along with police agencies across the country, from the East Coast to the West Coast, Midwest, South, Southwest, Northeast, Greater Northwest. I mean, with 8 police departments across the country, and they would just tune in as to what might be going on in a particular agency. So the producers wanted to come to Indianapolis. They wanted to come to this area, to the Midwest. They initially approached our friends at the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. Understandable. They're a huge agency. And they were declined, politely declined. And one of the producers used to work for the Fox affiliate, or new folks here at the Fox affiliate here in Indianapolis. So they connected with them, and they're like, hey, we want to come to Indy. We don't know. IMPD turned us down. We're thinking Speedway PD, which is another one of the excluded municipalities. A lot of people think of our friends at Speedway because of the Indianapolis 500 that runs every May. And so the folks at the local Fox affiliate, were like, Speedway's pretty slow most of the time, other than the month of May. You need to reach out to Lawrence PD. They're very media friendly, and here's a contact, and they're a very busy agency. So they connected with us. They sent out a supervising producer to meet with us, and we had a sit-down, face-to-face meeting with them. Just so happens the supervising producer they sent out was a North Central High School graduate right here in Indianapolis. Her parents still live here in Indy. She's very familiar with the area, and the relationship was solidly formed from there. So we We went on the show in 2018 and had a 98 episode run every Friday and Saturday night. The viewers of Live PD got to do a ride along with our officers and seven other agencies from across the entire country. So that's how it came to be.
Right. So I just want to point out to the listeners, there were 298 episodes of Live PD. You guys accounted for 98% of them, or 98 episodes, which is over 30% of what they put out. That is absolutely amazing. So my question is how did that attention from the show impact your agency, if it did at all?
Yeah, it did. But the I would say the footprint of the production of the show was minimal. It was just like any other media ride-along, really. And there were several things about the show. It is a true documentary. And I can tell you this, it was truly live. There was about a 15-minute delay on what the viewers saw. And the reason for that, A, was a cuss track. You know, you don't want to hear F-bombs on live national television if you can avoid it. And then the other part of that, too, was if, let's say there was a crash that could have resulted in fatality. You know, you would hate for somebody's loved one to learn that their loved one had been involved in a crash like that on live national television before, you know, they had an opportunity to hear it from us directly, from law enforcement or public safety directly. So there was a bit of a delay on it, but otherwise it was live. The producers went to each of the agencies and cut to, you know, went to the camera crews with them depending on activity. And, you know, we were a very, very busy agency. So, you know, in the genesis of that whole thing, I think it's important to share this. You know, there's a lot of discussion among our leadership, especially with our mayor, our chief, some of the other community leaders, as far as, is it going to put Lawrence in a bad light? Is it going to make us look bad? And our response to that across the board, from the mayor to the chief to me as the media person, was, you know, what's happening is what's happening. We're busy. Everybody knows that. So the activities that are occurring, they're occurring whether there's a national TV documentary crew with us or not. What the show is going to depict is the marvelous, the magnificent response that our officers had on a daily and nightly basis. We have a terrific department, and we had full confidence in the capabilities of our officers and their responses on the incidents that did occur. And we had a terrific 98-episode run, and we were the second longest-running agency on that show before it was canceled, by A&E, and it was an extremely popular. And the impact on our agency was, I would say, across the board positive. You know, you always have the critics, and that's okay. You know, sometimes that's how you learn and grow, and some of that can provide an opportunity for that, but a large majority, 98-99%, overwhelming positive, and especially within our own community. And the new show now is called On Patrol Live. It's on a different network, but it's being produced by the same people. And our agency had a standing invitation, and still does have a standing invitation, to be on that show. Our staffing levels right now don't allow for that to occur, but you have a lot of new people. And imagine being in your first year as a police officer and you have a national TV crew on the incident that you're on, you know, could make for some considerable nervousness on the part of a brand new police officer. So,
Gary, a question. So those of that may not understand it, and what happened here is when A&E canceled the show, what was the pressure that they were experiencing? Because that was right in the beginning, middle of the pandemic, essentially, correct?
Yeah, it was the pandemic, but the pandemic, we worked through that. You know, it was during the height of the aftermath of the George Floyd incident and the national anti-police rhetoric that was occurring. And let's be clear. Any of us that have ethics and integrity in law enforcement, clearly what happened in the George Floyd incident, that we can't do that. And there's been accountability there, and a lot of police departments went through a learning process in the aftermath of that, including ours. And so we took opportunity there where it existed to learn, to grow, to do better as a profession and as an agency. So let's be clear about that. But we're told, this is just my opinion, we're told that A&E fought the good fight. A&E is owned by Disney. We're told that it was Disney executives that decided to cancel Live PD at the height of its popularity as a response to some of the protests and some of the anti-police sentiment that was prevalent throughout the country during that time period. And but the producers brought the show back a period later on a different network, albeit. And but our body of work while we were on Live PD and while that show ran, it truly was a unblinking view of law enforcement in America. And that's exactly what the producers of the show wanted to present, was the truth of what's happening, the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, and to provide perspective on how policing works in America. And I believe they hit a home run, and I believe they still are.
And just, you know, what a poor perspective on Disney's point of view. If they would have said, okay, Live PD, here's what we want. We want to now see where these departments are changing things and where they're making improvements and how they're encountering the public out there now. Could you imagine the amount of positive PR that Disney would have gotten out of that show if they would have shown what these agencies were going through and experiencing, good, bad, or ugly, and then the changes that they were putting together for their people and for the community as a whole? I mean, what a great opportunity to center it, but they caved to pressure and I'm sure advertisers as well.
Yeah, you know, obviously we weren't in the room when the Disney folks were going through their decision-making process. But yeah, what an amazing opportunity that and a platform that show provided to tell just that, to tell that story, and the continuing story of how policing works in America. But I think your points are well made. I think also relevant is the producers of that show, regrouped, reconfigured, found another network, and are continuing on. And they rode along with our friends at Beech Grove Police Department right here in Marion County. We kind of made that link, introduced the production team to our friends at Beech Grove Police. And so they had about 6 months or so on the new show and had a great experience there, I'm told, as well. And, now they moved on to other agencies. But again, we have a standing invite, and you never know, the current chief and the current leadership there at Lawrence, they can always reconsider. You got to have buy-in, and maybe this is a segue. You got to have buy-in from your rank and file, from your officers that are out there doing the work every
Let's
day.
Let's talk about that. How did you do it in the beginning?
Yeah, so when the leadership agreed that being on the show would be a good thing, if your officers aren't into it, it's not going to work. So we did a series of meet and greets with the production team, and of course there was some concern at first. We had one officer in particular who wound up being a very popular officer on the show. But in the initial stages of it, he was one of those officers. When we'd ask about a media ride along, hey. Local media, like to do a ride along. Anybody interested? He was always one of those guys who was too cool for school. Not interested in doing the media ride along. No thanks. And so he agreed to do it. He kind of liked a couple of the photographers, a couple of the camera crew members. And so after his first ride along with Live PD, he enjoyed it so much he started his own Twitter page. And then a little while later, he started a Twitter page for his dog. For his dog. Not his police canine, but his personal dog. His dog.
That's what I was
going to
ask.
Yeah. So it was quite an experience. And it's kind of like one of those things, once officers see the first couple of officers doing it and having good experiences, they're like, hey, I want to do that too. That's cool. And it just kind of built up steam. And of our 65, full-time sworn officers, we didn't have that number then. I think we were around 58, 59 then. We had about 15 or so core officers that enjoyed being on the show. And really, it was a good experience for them, good experience for the agency, for the community, and the production team at Live PD, the producers, behind the scenes, had a positive experience there as well.
Gary, did your department, did Lawrence PD, did they have body cameras or in-car cameras at the time?
We did, yeah. So that's an important point to make also. We were the first agency within Marion County, Indianapolis here to invest in body-worn cameras for our officers. We did that in 2017, right at the genesis stage of the body-worn camera movement within law enforcement. We felt like it was important. We were not responding to some precipitating mm-hmm. event, some derogatory or negative event that required that. We were being proactive with it. And that was the style of our leadership team, our chief, our two deputy chiefs. We were very proactive with technology, with moving our department forward, and investing in body-worn cameras we felt was important. An important move, and we were the first agency in Marion County to do so. And so our officers, it kind of helped with the comfort level also, because our officers were already recording ourselves. And of course, in that period, we already knew there were cameras everywhere, so you're on camera. As a matter of fact, a maxim that we would say all the time is act as if you're being recorded all the time, because we usually were. And then when we provided body worn cameras to our officers, then you're already recording yourself. So it's really no big deal for having a documentary crew riding along with you. And they were really great about interacting with the officers, staying in the background when they needed to, and not being intrusive at all. These are experienced veterans when it comes to media production and documentaries. They've been with other agencies. They've done other work on other shows, and they were tactically sound. That was a really big deal for us and our officers. They needed to be tactically sound, and for instance, not backlighting our officers. And I can tell you this much too: they were in great shape. And we've got some young officers on late shift, like most agencies. Most of the young officers are on middle and late shift, who are obviously great tactical athletes, and they're bailing out on foot pursuits and doing different things that require a lot of physical exertion. And those camera folks, while carrying those cameras, are keeping right up with our officers, and they really did a magnificent job at capturing the action.
Gary, what suggestions would you have for agencies that wanted to invite a news documentary show into their community, whether it's Live PD or 48 Hours or whoever?
Yeah, so I would have that community discussion, be open and transparent about it. And if we want to, we can kind of start talking about that word transparency, that term transparency. I would respectfully submit that this comes somewhat of an overused term, but that's a different discussion. But have that community discussion. Certainly make sure you have leadership buy-in within your community, from your political structure, your mayor, your city council, your public board of works and safety, whatever your political infrastructure might be, and be open with the community also. We were very open about participating on the show. And then most importantly, I think you have to get the input of your officers that are going to be out there in the field doing the job day in and day out. Always listen to the guy or gal on the ground, right? It's a guiding principle that any leader should adhere to. Always listen to the guy or gal on the ground. They have the best knowledge, they have the best tacit knowledge about what's occurring in the field and what they're experiencing. So, getting that buy-in from everybody ahead of time up front, and making sure this is something everybody understands and thinks is a good thing, even if there is some concern, understand those concerns, do your best to address them. At some point, I think you have to have the confidence. We did have the confidence in your officers and your staff that they are going to do the right thing. They're going to perform their duties that we know they do on a day in and day night, day out basis, night in and night out basis. And it just gave us as department leaders tremendous confidence in considering and ultimately, going in and agreeing to participate in a show like a Live PD On Patrol Live or any of the other law enforcement documentaries. Also get to know, just building those relationships, getting to know the people. And it was important to us. This was a true documentary. That camera is unblinking. And that if something does occur that is undesirable, then, it's going to show that. And there needs to be accountability held also there. And I think that's another important key aspect.
Gary, what lessons did you guys learn from having that A&E come in and film?
Yeah, so the lessons or the takeaways, again, I know I keep going back to it, but investing in relationships, developing, maintaining, investing in those relationships. And, something we embraced a long time ago, and I personally embraced a long time ago, if we don't participate in the telling of our story as American law enforcement and the ethos, that goes along with that, then that story is going to get told for us. and frequently it's going to be told incorrectly or at a minimum incomplete. And so we need to do better at participating in that. And this was part of it. Having this opportunity to participate in this show was part of that openness and part of that telling our true story about what our profession is, what our agency is, and the officers that make up our law enforcement agencies across the country. And it was an honor for us to be a small part of that, of the telling of that story. And because frequently it does get told for us and frequently it's told incorrectly, incomplete, or in a way that is unfavorable. And we all know what the truth is and what our professional ethos is, the ethics, the integrity, and the desire to truly serve our communities. And so I think if we don't embrace the telling of that story, at least participating in the telling of that story, it's going to get told for us, and it's going to be at best incomplete and frequently incorrect, told incorrectly.
Right. And Gary, this goes to the credit to you and your department and obviously the storyteller that you are as a person. Law enforcement has never been really good about embracing that.
Yeah, true.
And we've only gotten better in the last few years about communicating. What are your thoughts on ways that agencies need to step that up?
Well, there are several. I think first of all, embracing the true professional public information officer, media relations person within a department, you know, somebody to take ownership of that whole thing and truly embracing that. And I like to think I was one of those people. I'll leave that for others to judge, but, I like to think that was very important to me anyways, to take ownership of that from the two agencies that I did have the great fortune of being a part of telling the story. And you need to make it you need to serve a cause greater than yourself. And it's something that I certainly embraced. You know, this is not about me, not about Gary Woodruff. This is about our agency. This is about our profession and truly telling that story in an accurate way. And again, I think embracing the concept that if we don't participate, if we don't take part in the telling of our own story, it's going to get told for us. We've already covered that. But in today's age also of shifting media, you know, when I first started, the main conduit was print, radio, and television media. Now you have all these other platforms, the social media platforms, and the other ways we have of telling our story and reaching a wider audience, reaching a nationwide audience. You think about that. 2 million people every Friday and Saturday night rode along with us, our agency, our officers, and the eight agencies that were participating in a show like Life PD at the time. I also don't think you can forget, though, that ultimately, especially with smaller agencies, think about it, in the state of Indiana, the average size agency is 4 officers. 4 officers is the average size agency in the state of Indiana. So for every Indianapolis, for every Lawrence, for every larger agency, there are a multitude of these smaller agencies. And they can embrace the same concepts just as much as a larger agency can. And having somebody on that agency truly embrace the telling of that story at the grassroots level within your community. And by that, I mean getting out there and talking to the community, interacting. You know, the only time that they see law enforcement officers in our community sees us as police officers, especially as agency leaders, is it should not be when something has gone awry, when something has gone wrong. We should be very well known in the community, invested in the community that we serve, and working on making those investments on a hourly, minutely, second, time frame, you know, making those investments on a consistent, constant basis. I think that's one of the things that kind of separates a smaller agency in particular from our friends at larger agencies. They really have to work pretty hard to make those investments, where a smaller agency frequently can invest. You know, they know Gary Woodruff, they know whoever the chief is, the deputy chiefs, the other leadership, and the officers. You know, they see them on a consistent basis, and they get to know them very well. We kind of took that model within an infrastructure like the Life PD, and displayed that for the nation to see. And yeah, we opened ourselves up to criticism. And we would get that on occasion. You know, sometimes there may be some validity to it. Frequently, there was not. It was more, it wasn't what the officers were doing. It was how they were doing it. I'll give an example, if I may. We had one officer who decided to give a break on a traffic stop. The person was found to have a little bit of marijuana in their possession, just a little bit of shake in the bottom of the bag. So the officer decided to give him a break. Well, the officer shook the contents out on the side of the road. You know, we would have preferred the officer put the evidence in the property room, but that's okay. He decided to dump it out on the side of the road. As he did so, he was wearing gloves, you know, of course. So when he took the gloves off, he was going to put the little baggie inside the gloves, take it to his car, and discard the bag. Well, the baggie flew off. You know, it was like a wind gust came along, the baggie flew off. So we got some feedback on social media about, oh my goodness, we can't believe that officer was littering. And it's like, really? I mean, the officer's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to build community relationships here. He's giving somebody a break to demonstrate that we don't just arrest everybody. You know, we do give breaks when breaks are called for. And you know, there's a reason for that. There's a reason that we do give breaks. And it's officer discretion. And then, you know, the baggie flies off in the wind gust that came up. And oh my goodness, we can't believe that officer's littering. So what the show didn't depict was the next day, that same officer was on the show on Saturday night as well. He goes back to that area with a trash bag and gloves up and starts collecting trash on the side of the road for an hour before his shift started, in kind of his own way of self-correcting. And collected a couple of bags of trash and then took them to the dumpster and threw them away from the roadside. So, you know, he made his amends and it was somewhat of a reaction on the social media side of that. So, got a little sidetracked on telling stories there.
Those are great. Those are stories. Those could have been a story that could have been put out on social media about that very thing, about him, the officer self-correcting and showing a couple minutes of video or a couple seconds of video and picking up garbage. What a great
way to correct. I think the officer did that. This is one of our officers that was pretty prolific on social media at the time. So I think he did exactly that. And I know the LAPD crew was with him when they did that. I don't know that it actually made the show. But I think he did some social media on his own Twitter feed there. Yeah, good on him. Good on that officer to do that.
Chief, what specialized training did you get to be a PIO?
Yeah, so in 1993, this is kind of unique. We had a local media person. She's now legendary here in the area. She still serves the local media. Her name is Ruth Ann Gordon. And she was doing media training for law enforcement in the 90s. And she'd do a two-day seminar just for new public information officers. And, you know, the whole concept of being a PIO with an agency was kind of new then. So she was really on the cutting edge of training police officers who were going to be agency PIOs. So that was my first exposure to that, and what a brilliant move on her part, because in addition to providing the training for law enforcement agencies, what else is she doing? She's creating resources for her storytelling for every officer, every agency that she trained. You know, she's getting to know them, and she's developing source developing herself at the same time that she's providing relevant, you know, media training for police officers. You know, most cops back then were, you know, maybe fairly good at their profession, but you know, the whole public information officer concept was pretty new then in the 90s. And so we truly wanted to embrace that part of it and be a part of telling our story, and wanted to learn more about how to do that. And of course, back then there was no social media. It was, you know, again, it was print, radio, and television. That was pretty much it. So to see some of those changes and some of those platforms come up, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know, and other media platforms, YouTube, and other ways of being able to tell our story, you know, I think progressive agencies have really embraced those and now where we're at, you know, video is king, you know, doing things like this, podcasts, you know, it's a great way to get your messaging out there and help the public understand our why. You know, who we are, what we are, why we are, and should truly understand the meaning and the investment of how law enforcement works in America and how police works.
So, Gary, you're retired now. You're retired now.
Correct.
What are you doing in your retirement?
Yeah. So in my retirement, yeah. So I'm doing some side work, some side hustle work. You know, I developed a good credibility, good knowledge base as far as doing dignitary protection, executive protection, you know, celebrity protection. I've done quite a bit of that over the years. I've done work for several mayors, protection work like that, close protection. I've had the good fortune to work for some of the most well-known and wealthy people in the world. And, you know, it's very much a word of mouth, a very, very small society there of professionals, of true professionals within that area. And pretty much everybody knows everybody. And I'm continuing to do some consulting and some contract work within media. This is All-Star weekend here in Indianapolis, so I have a lot of work lined up, with NBA All-Star game related events here in Indianapolis, and we'll continue on doing that. Otherwise, taking time for myself, you know, reconnecting with loved ones that maybe you haven't had a chance to reconnect with or to connect with as much as I would have liked as an invested professional for 40 years in law enforcement. So, you know, I'm staying plenty busy. Kind of wonder, wait, when did I find time to work? you know, I think it's important also, you work all these years, you know, for me, 40 years total, and you want to enjoy, you know, the latter parts of it. You know, I'm 60 years old, and, you know, I intend on living a very full, robust life on the other side of law enforcement here. So, you know, still staying involved, obviously, but you know when it's time. And when I was appointed chief in January of 22, you know, our mayor that we had at the time, Steve Collier, was just one of the best mayors I've worked for, you know, in addition to my own dad. And he was just an absolute best mayor and public safety in his heart. But he also just offered tremendous support and opportunity. But the best thing that he didn't micromanage. He let the police chief be the police chief, the fire chief be the fire chief, and he did mayor stuff. And he would always say he's smart enough to surround himself with good people. And I think any leader, any good leader can say that, you know, be smart enough to surround yourself with good people. I certainly did that as chief. I had a deputy chief who is now our chief, and who's a lot better and a lot smarter than me, and really our entire staff, top to bottom. I always viewed it this way. I never said my department. I never said, you know, the officers that work for me. No, I work for them. That's the way it works.
Sign of a good leader, Gary.
Well, I tried. My heart was in it, and I cared deeply. You know, so nobody's perfect. And you know, looking back on a 40-year career, are there things you do differently? Yeah, probably. But are things that you regret? No, man. I had the opportunity to accomplish everything I set out to accomplish, and then some things that I didn't know I wanted to do that I had the opportunity to do. So I couldn't have more career fulfillment. And being a part of telling the story of our agency, whether it was Frankfort Police, Lawrence Police, or whoever it might be, was an absolute honor. You know, I think if I had one piece of advice, invest in relationships. If I may share something we do kind of unique here in the Indianapolis area, we have a quarterly meeting with local public safety law enforcement representatives, public information officers, media chiefs, and all that, and local media representatives. It's open to any media representatives who want to come. We call it MISO meetings, Media and Emergency Services Organization. It's not like a 501(c)(3) or anything, but it's organized by the state police, by the Indiana State Police, and quarterly, local media and public safety, public information officers sit down and talk. And no, it has nothing to do, you know, everybody maintains their ethics and everything. But if there are issues that are coming up, if there are things that occurred like in a major event or a major scene or something that can be worked out, that's the time to do it. And that way, you know, when any agency has a major incident, you know, there are always lessons to be learned from that. You know, where's the media staging area going to be? What went well? What didn't go well? And we all have the desire to improve the community and to tell the story about what's occurring. And so sitting down and talking about that, and you talk to other law enforcement agencies across the country, and they're like, you guys do that? You guys actually meet with the media and talk to them, you know, and yeah, we do. And it, yeah. it works out great for everybody. You know, it's not a time to pitch stories. It's not a time to talk about story development or anything like that. It truly is a behind the scenes way to make sure that everything runs smoothly and that you invest in those relationships. You sit down, you have lunch, you get to know people on a personal basis. And yep. it's such a key. I would make it a point on a regular basis also to visit newsrooms around the area. Just arrange to go and visit the newsroom during the daytime, at night, you know, on the morning shows. And you're not necessarily there to be a guest on the show or anything. You're just there to invest in relationships and to get to know Absolutely. And to be known. I think those are some keys to success when it comes to being a media relations person, a public information officer.
Absolutely. Gary, is there a question I should have asked? And how would you have answered it if you got one?
Yeah. What a great thought. You know, have that whole discussion about transparency, you know, something's been on my mind on and off over the years. You know, you hear a lot of political people talking about, oh, we want to be transparent. And you hear a lot of law enforcement agencies talk about transparency. So can we talk about that for a second? You down with that?
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, and I, you know, we fully embrace the idea of transparency and I get that. But, you know, just in my opinion, and you tell me if you're different. I know our listeners, your listeners will weigh in on this also. But it's an interesting discussion to bring up because in my mind, the term transparency is a somewhat of a subjective term. And can mean something different to every person that you talk to. You know, how do you define transparency? And in my mind, sometimes as law enforcement agencies and as either leaders, as a chief or a deputy chief or a media person, we talk about transparency. And then what's the first thing that happens when a major incident occurs? Well, we can't discuss the details of the case because it remains under investigation. Well, mm-hmm. one minute you're talking about transparency, and then the next minute you're saying we can't discuss that because you know the matter remains under investigation. In my respectful opinion, it might be, and I would share with the audience here, might be better to talk about authenticity as opposed to transparency. Mm. And to help educate the public about whatever process might exist in your area. Let's use the example of an officer-involved shooting. There can be some controversy that surrounds officer-involved shootings, right? Fair.
Absolutely.
But I think explaining the process, the investigative process, and helping educate the public about the process can be something that can be very beneficial. It's not a matter of the police covering things up or not wanting to talk about what happened. We need to protect the integrity of the investigation and helping people understand that in an officer-involved shooting, there are two parallel investigations that are going to occur. There's the internal investigation. Did the officers follow the rules and the guidelines set forth by the department? And then the criminal investigation, the legal investigation, did the officers comply with established local, state, and federal laws? So I think helping right. educate folks about how that process works in an authentic way can be as much of a benefit as talking about transparency. My concern there is sometimes when we talk about transparency and that somewhat subjective term, that people arrive at a conclusion that may not necessarily be the case. And then when we're the people who are out there, the chief, the deputy chief, the media relations chief, whoever it may be, is saying, well, we can't talk about this because the incident remains under investigation. It just creates the circumstances where people could say, you're hiding something. And I think that's not good for any of us because, no, we're not hiding anything. Eventually, frequently, certainly here in the state of Indiana and in Marion County, every officer-involved shooting like that by law, by local ordinance, is going to be reviewed by a grand jury. So there is going to be civilian oversight, to use that term, but that process, by its very nature, by law, has to be done behind closed doors and where the citizens can work. The citizens are reviewing that. A jury of peers can review all of the information and make a determination as to whether probable cause exists for a criminal charge to occur. And so protecting that, the integrity of that process is not just to the benefit of the agency or the officers involved, it's to the benefit of everybody involved. So I think maybe being more authentic about the explanation of those processes, whatever they might be, in a particular area, whether it's the Chicago area, or I know you have a nationwide audience here, so whatever that process might be in particular jurisdictions, I think helping educate and inform the public and being authentic about that, it can be, you know, words matter. And when we use terms like overuse terms like transparency, as honorable as the intention is with people who are using that term, I would suggest that that might be somewhat of an overused term in today's day and age. And we may be doing ourselves more of a disservice by overusing that term than anything. I don't know. I'm just something's been on my mind
Gary,
for a while.
Gary, you just sparked a whole thought process in my mind about transparency and authenticity, and I write a PIO blog as well. It's called Life of the PIO, and I write every Friday. I write an article, and I have a feeling I'm going to be writing about transparency and authenticity. So I may come back to you and pick your brain a little bit more, because I really like this perspective. I think this is something that needs to be discussed more, and needs to be explored with other agencies as well, to get a better perspective of it, because I think you're right. I think that whole term transparency has been overused. It's almost like we want to err on the side of caution. We say that so many times,
right?
And that phrase is kind of overdone, and you know, we want to be open and honest, and the reality of it is we're trying as an agency, there's policy, and we don't really educate on policy to the public as much. And then there's the legal stuff that comes into play,
right?
And we don't necessarily talk about that. And they just want everything to come out. And the reality of it is we as an agency would love sometimes to put things out, but we also have the integrity of an investigation. We have the legal obligation to the victim and the victim's family. We have obligation to the accused. The accused is still innocent until found guilty. Absolutely. So there's a lot of things that come into play.
There are tremendous, there are competing aspects there. And I think some of this for me comes from my background as a detective. I was a detective for years, you know, working cases, everything from drug cases to violent crime. And, you know, I knew what I wanted as a detective. And I just think that, I think transparency is important. I think it's well intended. This is not a criticism. This is just an observation. But I do think we sometimes may do ourselves a bit of a disservice. We talk so much about transparency, and yeah, I agree. We need to be transparent. But the overuse of that term, I think we could use better terms, better words, such as authenticity and education, when it comes to explaining how processes work and how we have to work within the framework of the law. And I think that's something that media relations people, PIOs, can certainly be a part of, agency heads, chiefs, superintendents, deputy chiefs, people telling the story. And I think media can certainly help with that also, you know, and understanding how and why media works. But we also have never had better platforms, better opportunities as an agency to be a part of telling our own story and harnessing that. We've never had greater opportunity in leveraging those platforms than we do now.
Absolutely. The two former agencies that I were at, we put out a critical incident briefing video about the incident, and it has to be done within 21 days of the incident.
Sure.
That is literally, you know, a completely unedited video with graphics and maps and the talking about policy and procedure and what things need to be put in, what needs to happen in order for us to do certain things. Those are all things that I think a lot of agencies have started to embrace, and to do that in order to meet that burden of providing video to family and victims so that they understand what happened, and to the general public. I think of the most recent shooting that happened here in Illinois, where an officer went to an incident where there was maybe a mental health crisis occurring, and somebody was shot. So right now there's a very big demand on the municipal police department for information to be put out, and you know, that they have not released video yet. They're still well within a relatively short period of time. So whatever their policy might be, I don't know at this time, but there was another incident where an officer was just fired from a South Suburban police department here, where another young man was shot, who was mentally challenged and who was also in crisis, and he was shot, and the officer was terminated because of the violation of policy. So we need to be transparent. We need to get that information out. Unfortunately, this department did not put that information out for quite a long time.
Well, and I think a lot of that depends on the legal infrastructure that you have. You know, back in 2016, the Indiana State Legislature passed a body-worn camera law here in the state of Indiana. So it kind of took the some of the policy-making decisions away from the local agencies and gave us a common infrastructure to work with across the state. And then each agency could develop its own policy based on that. But it certainly provided a common infrastructure to be used there. But interestingly, and with some agencies, and this applies here in Indiana, there's also a competing law that indicates that matters of criminal evidence – such as a body-worn camera recording and a potentially criminal reviewable incident, is not releasable to the public. It has to be preserved as evidence and cannot be released to the public. So, you know, there are some agencies that make the choice to go ahead and do some of those critical incident videos. I'm not debating the efficacy of those, and I understand the reason why agencies make that decision, but there's also the state law and the trial procedural rules that say that technically that's against the rules. It's against the law, if you will, not necessarily a criminal law, but it's against the established rules of evidence when it comes to releasing items of evidence in public. As a, for instance, as an agency, right, we made the decision during my tenure anyway, that we did not show evidence. Like, we'd make a big drug bust. We would not put on the Facebook page, here's the 300 pounds of weed that we just seized and the six guns. Right. We talk about that, but we wouldn't put the pictures out there because those are considered matters of criminal evidence. A reason we did that was so that we could have consistency throughout. Some of the agencies that put those items of evidence out there, and then when they do have a critical incident, they say, "Well, we can't release the evidence there because it's against the rules." Where you did it in all these other circumstances, why are you not doing it now?
Right.
What are you trying to hide?
Right.
So I think as long as an agency develops consistency within its decision making like that, policy, common practice, law, however that consistency is developed, as long as they do consistency, I think, or whether the media likes it or not, I think they can at least get along with the public and represented by the media. I think they can at least understand it and say, well, they're at least being consistent with that. That's a very wide-ranging topical conversation there, probably for another completely separate podcast. But I have a feeling we
may be talking about this. I might bring you back and with a couple other people and do a panel about that whole thing. That might be an interesting discussion.
I would love to do that.
Here, let's change it up. Let's go. Oh, that would be awesome. Great. Let's go to rapid fire questions. How about that?
All right, let's do it.
Texting or talking?
Texting or talking, man, a little of both, but I kind of like the texting part of it, although understanding the limitations of digital communication. You know, you don't have tone and inflection in digital communication.
Right, but, exactly.
But yeah.
Chocolate or vanilla?
I'm a chocoholic. The results are obvious, right? But yeah, I'm a chocolate guy.
Coffee or tea?
You know, 40 years of public safety and law enforcement, I never developed acquired a taste for coffee. I never did. So hot chocolate is my thing, but I'm also a bit of sweet tea guy. I'm the guy who did the, you know, drank whatever Coke or whatever for years. Thought I was going to be all healthy by switching over to sweet tea, of which I was drinking a gallon a day, and then started developing kidney stones, which was just a true joy. And so I had to switch off of sweet tea and go to the water program. But coffee or tea for sure.
There you go. Adult drink of choice.
Adult drink of choice. You know, I'm not really a big drinker. I haven't been for a while, but, you know, I do like a nice sweet wine, you know, like a Moscato or an ice wine. You know, not really a hard liquor person, never developed a taste for that. But so I guess I would have to say a nice sweet Moscato or like an ice wine when it comes to that. And, of course, I was stationed in Europe, in Germany, in the military, in the Army in the 80s. So, you know, did a few mustache dunks into the beer steins. Then also because that was just part of the rite of passage of being stationed in Germany. You know?
Of course.
So there you go.
What would be your superpower if you could have one?
You know, I was thinking about this, and so I'm going to be that guy. You know, we're talking about a superpower. We talked about like DC Comics type people, or are we just talking about any kind of a superpower you could come up with?
Any kind of superpower, my friend.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty wide ranging. But all right, I'm going to go global here. You know, to have the ability to be able to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, would just be magnificent, right? What a terrible set of circumstances going on there in the Middle East right now. Yeah. And the right to defense and it's just a long standing conflict over there. And I don't pretend to know all the answers, but if I had one superpower, the ability to be able to resolve that and everybody to be able to worship in the way they want to worship, who they want to worship and how they want to do it, where they want to do it. You know, like we do for the most part enjoy here in the United States, and resolve that conflict. That would be magnificent.
That would be great. What would be, I'm sorry, ask permission or beg for forgiveness?
Oh, beg for forgiveness all day long. Audacity, right?
Exactly. Place you most want to travel to?
Israel. When I was stationed overseas, I had the opportunity to travel everywhere. I'm glad I took it. Greece, Italy, Spain. This was before the wall came down, so couldn't travel to Eastern Bloc countries as they existed then. But had the opportunity to literally travel everywhere. The only place I didn't make it to that I regret is Israel. And I would love to have visited the Holy Land there.
Guilty pleasure food.
Guilty pleasure food. I'm a chocolate guy, good chocolate pie, dark chocolate pie, dark chocolate cake, things like that. Well, again, the results speak for themselves, but I'm totally a chocolate guy, I'd have to say, yeah, that's definitely a guilty pleasure.
If you could choose to sit down and have tea with any historical figure, living or dead, who would it be?
Patton.
Well, that would be a great interview. Yeah, that would be a great conversation.
Yeah.
Gary, key points here.
Yeah, my secondary to that would be Reagan, probably. But Patton would have to be it would have to be tops on
Patton
that list.
Patton and Reagan. Now that would be some interesting conversations.
Right.
Oh my God, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Right.
What key points would you like the listeners to take from the interview today?
Yeah, just thank you for having me on the show, on the podcast here, and connect anytime. Always enjoy connecting with people. You know, I'm on LinkedIn. I do not have a website right now. I'm kind of working on that, I can be found on LinkedIn pretty readily. And always enjoy connecting with people across the country. And I am all about investing in relationships, developing, maintaining, investing in relationships. You know, it's been the power of LinkedIn how I found the PIO podcast here is through LinkedIn. So leveraging those platforms and I do have a LinkedIn presence. I'm working on a web presence right now. That's still a work in progress. We'll continue working on that.
Outstanding. Anything else you'd like to add, Gary?
I don't think so. And let's think about those future shows. I love the idea of having several guests talking about that whole transparency.
That whole transparency and authenticity thing is really sparked something in me. I think I'm going to work on a couple people and get you on there and get them on there and get us all together as a group and have that discussion. I think that's a interesting topic, and I'm going to do some exploring into it. And then, we'll set it up sometime in the near future.
Yeah, I think it's a worthwhile conversation to have and something to be very interesting to the other PIOs, the other media relations folks out there. And it really sparked that conversation. Yeah, I did all that with intent. And I think it's something that's worthwhile for us to talk about. As well intended as it is, I want to clarify that. I'm not being a critic or saying that the whole transparency thing isn't important and isn't a critical topic to discuss, but I think how we do it is just as important.
Right, so, right.
And how we continue to evolve and to continue to invest in that and define it.
Gary, I appreciate it. We already know how people can connect with you through LinkedIn. I will make sure I add that into the show notes so they can, if they want to reach out and discuss anything, whether it's even talking to you about executive protection. You never know. There might be, I have plenty of private citizens that are always looking for things. So if they want to connect with you in the Lawrence in the Indiana metro area, why not? Right.
Yeah, and I've literally traveled across the country doing that kind of work, so we're not limited to Indiana or Indianapolis doing that. And have a network of people around the country that I've worked with, had a good opportunity to work with, and it's a pleasure to stay in this space, also in the media relations, public information officer space. I've invested in relationships there across the country as well, not just locally but across the country. So folks can connect anytime. Readily located on LinkedIn, and look forward to connecting with anybody who'd like to connect.
Thank you very much. And that's retired Chief of Police Gary Woodruff from the Lawrence Police Department, Indiana. Thank you for being on the show, sir.
Honored to do so. Thank you. Have a good day.
That's all for this week. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get notified on the latest episode. If you are listening on a platform that allows you to leave a review, please give us a review. Any review is appreciated. To support our efforts with the PIO podcast, you can click on the support button in the show notes, and any donation is appreciated. Thank you.